Tonight's story doesn't unfold in crumbling asylums or a forgotten battlefield. It happens inside a quiet Massachusetts estate, one that welcomed investigators in and then slowly began revealing exactly who was still inside. Our guest tonight is Monique Tousoun, New Hampshire's crowned hostess with the mostest and one of the most fascinating trigger objects in the paranormal world. With over two decades of performance experience and years of investigative work in some of the most active locations in the country, Monique doesn't just step into haunted spaces, she changes them. During a five-hour investigation at Emery Estate in Weymouth, Massachusetts, Monique and her team encountered three very different spirits. Names were confirmed, details matched, personalities emerged, but it was how this investigation ended and what one spirit finally admitted that left everyone questioning whether death truly changes who we are or simply removes the mask. This is not just a ghost story about tragedy. It's a story about choice. And it starts now, right here on the Best in Paranormal Talk Radio. I'm Dave Schrader. This is our Paranormal 360. And joining me on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline is Monique Tousoun. Welcome to the show, Monique. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
I love getting a chance to hear from different perspectives, different locations. Obviously, people love a good ghost story. You're here for both hours, so we don't get just one tale, we get two. How long have you been involved in paranormal research and investigating?
So it started when I was a child, and I realized I was sensitive as a child. And I think I kind of scared that part of me away a little bit, but it kind of fascinated me and turned me into like a horror nerd. And I became obsessed with things like Elvira and the ghosts and horror movies. And then around when I started to become 20 years old, which is about 20 years ago now, I decided to try ghost hunting. And I started ghost hunting and I was having a blast for about 15 years. And then COVID hit. And during COVID, I lost bars, I lost clubs, I lost all these places that I would go and perform in drag. And I decided, let's try ghost hunting in drag and see what happens. So during COVID was the first time I actually went ghost hunting in drag. And it was the first time I got different evidence than I've ever received before, which was really cool. The spirits didn't seem to know what to do with me. That first night I went ghost hunting in drag was at a place I'd done like three or four times. And that very first night we got an EVP that said, he's a lady. The ghosts were saying wig, heels. They were saying everything cohesive with what I was wearing. And it ended up turning me into the weirdest trigger object in the paranormal field. And yeah, so I've been ghost hunting for 20 years, but only five in drag. And writing books and the research and this is kind of something that's fallen into my lap in the past few years. And we're already writing a third book and there's a fourth one coming as well. So this is going to end up being a whole haunted series of investigations with a drag queen.
It's pretty cool, too, that you take this a little bit further than normal people would do in the sense of, I'm just going to bring in an old radio or song from that era, bring in old jewelry or clothing from that era, but to actually, kind of be invested into it in your drag character to do these type of investigations. I've watched spirits be very interactive in ways that had blown my mind before at the Stanley Hotel, watching one of the religious leaders that was with us when things started to get weird coming through the spirit box. We were in the back of the room. He reached in and took out a bottle of holy water and placed it between his hands. And right through the spirit box, very loudly, you hear, he's got holy water. Ooh. So to detail it, that's fascinating that the ghosts not only are seeing you, but they're also investigating you in a sense. So they're trying to figure out what exactly is going on, who's here. And do you find that it's obviously a lot of these haunted places are throwback locations, right? Do they seem shocked? Do they seem in awe? Do they seem very accepting? Or does it kind of depend on the location, the site, and the people that you're investigating?
It does depend on the location for sure, but they seem to be amused by it. It almost seems to like feed them energy and kind of battery them up a little bit. And they get more playful. It probably goes hand in hand also with the fact that I feel like when we're investigating, even if I'm not in drag, if we're having fun, the spirits seem to be having more fun with us as well. The energy seems to be a little heavier. But with drag is the highest form of energy. So showing up in these places, like let's say like a 1950 asylum, in the 1950s, I would have been institutionalized for doing drag. So that asylum probably had someone that was me in there. And like Sweet Springs, we went there one time, Sweet Springs Sanitarium. And I was led into the men's corridor there. and all the way to a room. And we go into this room, which is strictly men's corridor. There's nothing women's on this floor. They weren't even allowed on this floor. And in this men's room, we found very large women's clothes, like tall women's clothes. So I was like, I think I just got led to an institutionalized cross-dressers room. But spirits hit on me. They don't know what to do with the fact that I'm in drag. It's so confusing to them. And like, I haven't done a prison yet, but I can only imagine what the energy in a prison would do to me in drag.
Yeah, wow. That's something you got to sit back and think through. Let me ask real quickly, in investigating, obviously, there are certain things that kind of light us up. You know, you hear about the Stanley Hotel, you hear about, you know, the Queen Mary, you hear about Eastern State Penitentiary, Waverly Hills, Rolling Hills, and those are kind of everybody's iconic bucket lists. But are there specific reasons, like Emory Estate or the library we'll talk about a little bit later, were pull points to you?
Actually, no. And all honestly, I was pulled to Emory Estate because I'm finding actually it's hard to find locations that want to work with a drag queen. It's something so new to the paranormal world that I think people are kind of a little sketched out by it at first. They think it's more entertainment than professional. And I think once they get me in there, they see it's the complete opposite of that. There's obviously an entertainment aspect to what I do, but there's also a very professional. I take things very seriously. I treat everything with respect. But Emory reached out to me and it was a place that gave me a chance and I took the opportunity and it ended up being one of those nights where for 3 hours straight, nothing was not happening. You know, you don't get a lot of locations where things are consistently happening for that long. So it just ended up being that. And I credit a lot of that to the team I was with too, you know, putting the right mediums together. You know, you working with Cindy, you know, you work really well with her. I work really well with these mediums that I work with. And we seem to battery off of each other and, you know, feed each other information as well. So this night just ended up being full of crazy high energy.
And just for the lay people listening and maybe that don't understand the vernacular we're using, when you say that you're feeding them information, it's not like you're going in front loaded, like you've done the research and you're telling the mediums things that then could skew their perspectives. What you're saying is that the information that they're gaining and getting from the location feeds into one another and opens maybe even a more clear and concise pathway to these discussions.
Yeah, like we could be in separate rooms writing down the exact same notes. And then when we collide together, it's like, well, you're getting the same thing I'm getting, the same names, the same, you know. And this is something that happens to me. I don't know what it is. I call myself a medium rare. My co-author kind of named me that. I'm sensitive, but I'm not the kind of medium that can just start doing a reading on somebody. I'm trying to learn tarot, but I'm not there yet. Sometimes when I go into locations, I don't know why, but children are extremely attracted to my energy. It might be because I have a child. They might think I'm a clown. They might just see the high energy and the fun personality and they come to it. But for some reason, when I go ghost hunting, children seem to come right to me in locations. And that was the case at Emory Estate as well. And Emory Estate was a building that was known for having a very religious, Billy Graham spoke there, like the speaker from the 80s. And this place was known for having some abuse on the third floor for children that were special needs were supposedly chained up on the third floor. And like all this crazy stuff happened in this location. But we had a very deep connection to this little boy and this other spirit, probably for a solid couple of hours until we really figured out what was going on there.
All right. We are up against a break. We're going to come back, talk more with Monique. We'll invest ourselves into the ghosts of Emory Estate. We are Paranormal 360. Welcome back to the program. I'm Dave Schrader. I'm my guest this evening, Monique Toussoun. We're going to talk about the ghosts of Emory Estate. Now, this is in Massachusetts, correct?
Yeah, it's in Weymouth, Massachusetts, about an hour away from Boston.
Okay, and how did this location come to your attention and set your sights on, this is a place I need to get into and investigate?
Yeah, so New England is a kind of a heavy area for paranormal locations. So this was just one that popped up on my Facebook, and I'm always attracted to haunted locations. It doesn't matter what it is. I want to investigate it. And I reached out, I got into this place and I decided to do an event there. I do a lot of events around New England. Sometimes it's hard to completely get events get evidence at events. And you know that, like when you have too many people, sometimes it can be overcrowded and you kind of have to break them up and split them up so that the noise isn't too loud. But this was an event we had and I had three teams leading this event. So one in the basement, one on the middle floor and one on the third floor. the history of the building was very religious. It had a lot of negativity on the third floor. There were schools there in the 80s. Billy Graham spoke there. But they taught, I don't know if it was CCD or whatever Sunday school there in those years that it was open for that reason. When I got there, I immediately felt the heaviness of the energy, but I felt the energy of Edward Emery, this old man who was wheelchair bound and in pain, and like all my bones hurt walking into this place. I had to sit down. I felt like I needed a cane, very arthritis feeling all through my body. And we were taken on a tour before the guests arrived for the night, and we were taken up to this third floor, which is, at the time, we didn't know what happened on this third floor. But as soon as you cross the threshold onto this third floor, it is like the most guttural feeling. It makes you feel sick to your stomach. You feel very upset, like it almost hurts. And looking down the hallway of this third floor, in my third eye, I'm seeing this older woman just crossing back and forth, like she's the person watching over these children up here. And I'm just getting this vibe that she's not a very nice person. She's a very strict, old, maybe nun sort of woman. I don't know. She's just very old and very strict. And the children that are in this floor are very, I believe they were special needs, or they were the children that were too hard to deal with. So they kind of put them up there. And yeah. And then we ended up not being able to investigate the third floor, cause my co-author Rob is very sensitive to negative energy. And we sent a different team up there, and we ended up staying on the second floor because of that negativity.
Was that type of negativity just the kind of the overwhelming anxiety and everything of the people that once resided there? Or was there something trying to push you out, do you believe?
Could be a little bit of both. I feel like it was negative in the sense that you could feel a little bit of that abuse. It felt sad. It was someplace you definitely didn't want to hear the stories, because you already kind of knew what was happening up there, and you really didn't want to dive deeper into that sort of pain. And Rob is very sensitive to the pain from the other side, and he did not want to feel any of that abuse. He didn't want to see it. He also certainly didn't want to connect with it for 6 hours, because this event was 6 hours long.
Wow. Yeah. And I think a lot of people forget that when they go to investigate these places, it's not just fun and games. It's not just wandering around in a dark place. A lot of these places are haunted for a reason. There is something about that. And in most cases, it seems that it's known to draw some of the more broken and fractured elements of our soul, those base elements. And if you are sensitive in any way, shape, or form, and even if you're not, I've seen people that claim they have no sensitivity at all, they will feel overwhelmed by emotion, sometimes even by illness, physical illness, like they're picking up on whatever the people were dealing with, what the maladies were of that time and in that location. So please do bear in mind, and you heard Monique say it, I mean, it can definitely affect you and impact you, but you have to be smart when you get those senses, back yourself off. I know there are so many of the people that listen to these shows and watch the TV programs, and they feel like, no, that's when you push further and you go in. And until you really understand what you're sensing, what you're feeling, it's good to lean into your natural intuition, which is, don't do this. Back yourself out of it and allow yourself to learn and train more and start on those floors that aren't so aggressively energized. Is that a fair assumption for you as well, coming into this and dealing with these type of hauntings, that you really do have to be more mindful of your own protection?
Yeah, and we call that paranormal hygiene at my events. And we really encourage people to clear their energy before they leave. We encourage eating chocolate before people leave, raise the endorphins. We try to keep our guests safe, too. We teach them how to protect themselves in their white bubbles. You know, we always encourage people that if they are getting overwhelmed to leave. Walk out, take a break. Don't let anything get into you. Don't let anything overwhelm you. This is, it sometimes is. Most of the time, it's negative energy. You know, trauma creates that imprint that we're going ghost hunting for. You know, it's not always that we're coming across happy spirits.
Well, and we also have to bear in mind that many of us are fascinated by this, love it, really want answers. But we do get frightened in these situations too. And sometimes your own heightened anxiety in conjunction with the anxiety and the scars, the psychic scars of those locations, can really trigger you. And in some instances cause that wave of mass hysteria, because I've watched it happen in large groups where one person starts to feel irritated and agitated. And because of that, then the person next to them is like, why, what are you picking up on? And then their anxiety starts going up, and it can really cause a domino effect.
Yeah, we've had groups where people all started to get really sick to their stomachs. We've had to leave buildings to get fresh air. We've had people run out of events, like right through the front door within 30 minutes of them starting.
Wow.
Yeah.
So this place definitely has an imprint to it. Now, do you feel that this building is inhabited by intelligent spirits, by residual spirits, by transient spirits that are just passing through? Is it kind of a myriad of everything?
It's a lot of everything. The spirits specifically in the book are, we call them ghosts. They're spirits that have not moved on for whatever reason. And then there's another spirit in the book that we believe is connected to an object.
All right. Now, let's start to get into that. And I know we've got about 2 minutes left in this segment. When you are there, and Rob Guttrow, who also is an animal medium, right?
He is a pet medium.
Pet medium, and can pick up on these different sensitivities. I'm just curious, when you're going through a location like this, obviously you can sense when there are darker elements and things to be mindful of. But are there times that when you're going through there, you can sense maybe the things that they, in their broken mental states, might have been dealing with, things that they were seeing, things that they were experiencing? You know, do you think that maybe they weren't as mentally inhibited as people thought? They were just sensitives that were picking up on all of these different elements as well?
Yeah, I absolutely think that. I think people who are sensitive probably leave a larger imprint in the afterlife because we're more aware of that energy as well while we're living. So, you know, when we pass on, maybe we are more aware. And I believe that trauma leaves a really big imprint, but I also believe that happiness could leave a really big imprint on a location as well. Something very happy leaves just as big of an energy, you know, energy bubble as a negative energy. So there are locations that I investigate where the energy is completely happy and positive. And the more fun you have with it, the happier that energy gets and the louder the location gets. But you have locations that are completely negative and you're like, I'm not going to feed that negativity, but you can feed it as much positivity as you want. It's still going to be negative right back at you because that's what it knows.
We do need to take another break. We'll come back. We'll get more into the ghosts of Emery Estate, because I'd like to know a little bit more about the type of activity and the type of spirits that you did encounter during these investigations. And again, let me remind you, we have a link for Monique's book on today's program guide. So if you're listening live, you could check it out in the podcast form. And if you have not yet subscribed, go subscribe to Paranormal 360. That's Paranormal 360, your home for everything strange and supernatural. I'm Dave Schrader, and we'll be back right after this. If you've ever wanted to spend the night somewhere, the stories don't end when the lights go out. Let me tell you a little bit about the Palmer House Hotel, right here in the heart of beautiful, friendly Sauk Center, Minnesota. The historic hotel is known for its cozy rooms, welcoming atmosphere, and some very spirited activity. Guests and investigators alike report unexplained footsteps, voices, shadows, and encounters that don't clock out at checkout time. You can enjoy a comfortable overnight stay, incredible food and drinks in our restaurant and pub, and even take part in real paranormal investigations throughout the year. So come for the comfort, stay for the history, and all of its reminders. You can take my word for it as the owner, or come see for yourself. Let the adventure begin. Book your stay at the Palmer House Hotel. You can find us at thepalmerhousehotel.com or call now 320-351-9100. That's 320-351-9100. We're waiting to welcome you. Before we go too much further into this segment, Monique, I do have something that I'd like to address very quickly, especially being aware of the situation and our guests and who's with me. In the opening of today's program, when we were having our first part of our discussion, talking about trigger objects and you utilizing yourself as somebody that kind of creates an energetic stir, I made a comment that made me feel uncomfortable, and I just wanted to address that because it wasn't, I'm sure, perceived the way it was meant when I said, well, regular people going in to investigate. And that is in no way a slam against somebody that is doing drag and working in this profession like you are. I meant the basic investigator goes in not knowing or only utilizing certain elements of trigger objects and things that were involved in that. But I wanted to, out of respect for you as my guest and for the listeners, to respond to that and let you know that that was not my intent in that comment when I made it. So I wanted to to just bring that up front.
Oh, thank you for that. I didn't even pick up on it. I am so hard to offend or upset. I have been doing drag for 20 years and I've heard it all. I've been through it all. And I'm one of those people that's like, try to offend me, I'm going to get you back.
I appreciate that. But it's also important to note that, you know, I want to be careful of words that are used as well, because,
yes,
you know, we take advantage and forget that words matter. And yes, intention matters. And if you don't understand the intention behind the word, it can be taken clearly out of state. So I just wanted, for any of our listeners that might have been offended by that comment, to know that as well. So Emery Estate, you're going to be here with us for the next hour as well. And we're going to talk about a very haunted library, going full on Ghostbusters. But Emery Estate, when you're in there, you're having these experiences, are you physically, not just third eye, but are you physically seeing, and is Rob seeing ghostly apparitions, shadowy figures, wisps? What is the experience like in the visual spectrum?
Yeah, so I was stationed between two rooms. One room was like a bedroom, and then the other room was being used as an office, but I was facing this giant spiral staircase. And I kept telling the group that I was seeing something running past back and forth across the door. Like something was curious, but not coming through the door. And I'm like, I feel like it might be a child or an animal, because it's just very curious. And so we kind of put a hot and cold sensor outside the door just to see if we'd pick up any of that cold air going by. And it was pretty quick. We immediately started to pick up cold. And I always demonstrate my hot and cold sensor with an iced coffee. I put it right behind the thing and show that the iced coffee is going to mark out exactly in the sensor where it is, so that people are aware of where that it's actually showing us where the cold spot is too. It's not just showing it's cold, it's showing us right where the cold is. So we had this little cold spot that just was kind of peeking over into the left side of the device. And then I started to put my hand on the right side and I show them that my hand was warm and blah, blah, blah. And I asked the energy to come to the left and it started to just come a little bit further out. And then it started to make the whole thing blue. And immediately I'm like, okay, we've got a kid, we're playing now. And then Rob, who's a medium, is seeing things in his third eye. And he's like, it's a little boy. And I'm like, I can tell that too. I get numb on my right leg usually when it's a little boy. And I'm like, he's being very playful. We were not getting a lot of like actual intellectual evidence out of him. He's not speaking a lot. We just know he's there. At the same time, this little boy is connecting with me. There's a girl that's part of the guest that's starting to get severe anxiety and she's starting to feel really gross. And Rob is like, you need to just step out here, take a crystal with you, you know, let this energy cleanse you and, you know, just take a break and blah, blah, blah. While she's taking this break, we have Rob talking about this man that he's seeing right now. And this is something, I don't know if he was seeing this with his third eye or with his naked eye, but this was an older man in a suit. And he was very, very statuesque, very intimidating. And so this man started to change the energy a little bit. Things get heavier. And then this little boy is there. And we can tell there's something off. And we start to think, well, maybe we can help cross this little boy over, help, you know, heal this little boy's energy in some way, shape or form, and kind of figure out what's going on here. Well, we started to get the impression just through what we were getting from this older guy that he wasn't going to let us do anything to this little boy's energy. We move it on, or we kind of got this vibe that he was kind of trapping it there, not even knowing each other in living form. This little boy, we believe, was from a carriage accident on the property. And this guy, we believe, could be possibly Edward. And we believe that his spirit just never crossed over Edward's. And he kind of trapped this little boy with him so he wasn't alone in there. And had a hard time pulling this little boy out after we figured some of this stuff out. We couldn't get the little boy to come back.
So once Edward, or the spirit you believe is Edward, this kind of more of the overlord spirit, once his presence was there, the little child spirit seemed to just shut down.
It wouldn't move. It certainly wouldn't leave the area, but it wouldn't communicate the same way. It definitely got stiff and almost scared. And then at some point we got the old man to kind of back away a little bit. We got the little boy to play and run past the sensors, play with tripwire and dead bells as well. And then we were getting things like Monique through the radio. We were getting hi from the little boy. We got we're getting things through the radios as well. Like, but very small words, like a child would say, you know, not anything full sentence. But anytime that man would come back, it was almost as if the little boy would repress and go back out and just wouldn't come in. And we started to gather throughout the night that we were starting to feel that this little boy couldn't be accessed because this man was kind of holding that energy hostage in a sense in the afterlife.
Let me ask you, this is maybe kind of a weird point to bring in, but what if you're not dealing with two separate entities? What if one element of it is this man, his elder version, and he's holding on to that younger version of himself?
Very
well. Do you think that that might be a possibility? We talk about these fractals and pieces of who we are that we leave behind. So that would explain why sometimes we see a child in a location, but we know that that child grew up to be a full-grown adult who passed away later, yet it still seems intelligent, not just a replay of something going over and over again. Do you think maybe part of the reason why it wasn't letting go is this is all it knew and it was familiar with and it was holding on to duality of itself?
Yeah, very well could be that. It also could be very well that he saw something in this little boy that he saw in himself too. Or maybe it reminded him of a child. This was a man who had children and has kids too. So I don't know. It very well could be. Obviously, paranormal is not, you know, specific research science. We do what we can. We write our stories, but we'll never really truly know until we're on the other side, right?
Exactly. Well, and I'm in no rush to get there. So I'll find out those fun bits when we do cross. Monique Toussoun, our guest, we do have a link again for the book. And do me a favor, friends. I mention this every week, and it's important. When you get a book like this, don't just read the book, write and review the book afterwards, because every time you do that on places like Amazon and Barnes & Noble and Goodreads, it helps the author's book get exposed to more and more readers so other people can find these great pieces of information and investigative techniques, and it helps shape our field. So please consider doing that for every author that you come into contact with. We'll be back. We'll wrap up with the Ghosts of Emery Estate and find out some of the other secrets when we return right here to the Paranormal 360. Welcome back to the program. I'm Dave Schrader, Monique Toussoun, our guest this afternoon, and or this evening, I should say. And we are discussing the Ghosts of Emery Estate. And this is in Massachusetts. Quite a few different elements of spirits and spiritual activity, different layers, different timelines. This estate really kind of housed many different people over its time there, from perhaps mentally deficient to just problem people in the society that there was no place to put them. It was a catch-all, like these poor farms that we used to hear about. Is that a fair assessment as well?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, getting into this, and again, folks, the book is written so that it can go in much more depth. In the period of 1 hour of talking together, we're simply scratching the surface. But you've encountered this man and this child spirit. Obviously, there is something that's keeping them together, whether willingly or not. But you encountered three specific spirits. Is that right? That really kind of set you off. Are these two of the three that we've already
mentioned? So, okay. Yeah, and these were two of the three. And we wanted to do some spiritual guidance with this little boy. And we even tried to call in Patty Negri to help us. And we couldn't get anywhere with this little boy after the second investigation. So by the time we got to the third group, he was gone. The man was gone. And we decided we had to try something different because you don't want to ever leave a group stagnant. So we decided to I go sit in another room and I ended up sitting in front of this mirror, and sitting in this mirror, I saw something happen to me in it. And I was like, okay, I'm going to leave the room. I'm not going to say anything. I'm just going to tell people to come sit in front of this mirror. And if they can kind of get the same story I got, then we'll confirm what just happened to me. And so we started to send people in there in groups of two because obviously sometimes guests are a little afraid to do things alone because they don't know what to expect yet. So we send them in pairs. And every person that came back, we told them to keep their experience quiet until everyone that got a chance to do it went and did it. And everyone that came back to the group, we all sat down, and in a little while, we ended up having this conversation. What happened to you in front of this mirror? What happened? Well, long story short, I turned into an old man. And I was watching someone get ready in this mirror, and every single person that looked in this mirror either was the old woman or the old man watching the old woman getting ready. And they all got the same vibe from this mirror. And so we started bringing we bought a Phasmabox radio in at this time to just get some quieter answers without that radio noise in the background. And we were starting to get things like, I miss her, just things about this mirror and this little old woman. And I really think that the spirit of this old man probably passed before his wife, and he bought her this in his life and just kind of continued to watch her get ready in it after he passed. And
well, that's beautiful.
Yeah, I kind of wanted the mirror after. I wanted to take it home with me. It just has a cute, and I don't even think he's like stuck. I just think he's visiting this mirror, and it's just a cute story that ended a weird night of negative energy, you know?
When you find locations that have this much energy and this many stories that need to be told, do you continue to feel pulled back repeatedly to a location like this?
Yeah.
Do you ever worry that it becomes an obsessive point for you as an investigator? I've met some people that they start this with pure and good intentions and slowly evolve into this almost obsessive, compulsive need to be there. And I wonder, is there a deeper reason for that?
Not with this location. I actually have not even been back to this location since. But there is a location that I have that need to go to and be there. And when I'm there, I don't want to leave. Like, I physically have to make myself leave in the morning.
Really?
Yeah. So there is one location like that, but it's a love location. It's a location filled with family, you know? It's a happy place. It's not a negative place like this.
That's fantastic. Yeah, I just always am curious. Sometimes these darker spots, I know that there are a lot of people that are drawn to darker spots and darker stories, and many want to help. Some just seem pulled back for, you know, reasons that don't make sense to anyone but them. But I often wonder, do we feel pulled back to some of these locations because maybe we were there? Maybe in a past life, this was a place that we called home.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I always think that we attract our same energies that we've been with in past lives. And I believe, like, I don't know if the book is called Many Times, Many Lives. It's something about past life regression. And this book really made me open my mind a lot about, you know, all these past lives that we've had, and how in this book, this person talks about how they connected with their mom in many lives, and their family was their family in many lives. And it kind of like makes you think a little differently.
It also makes you think that if we are the product of reincarnation and the soul does get to continue to live on and we leave these pieces behind, could it be part of the baggage that we carry forward? Mm-hmm. Are we still rooted in these pains and anxieties and depression? And I think that's why these places are so important, because we need to see these places, be a part of them, and remember that part of history and maybe start to reclaim who we were from these locations. You know, I like the fact that you went in with the intention to try to help this young boy cross over. Do you feel like you were able to do that at any point, help them, or no, he would just vanish once the man was there?
But I always do say this, and because some guests get very emotional over these things. Mm-hmm. And anytime we're going into a place and listening to their stories, we're healing them in some way, shape, or form. We're
Agreed.
Giving them positive energy, and we are healing. Regardless if we're moving the spirits on or not, we are healing them. We're giving them energy. We're hearing their stories. We're passing their stories on. We're doing something for them. We're giving them guidance in a way, and in the best way we can, because not every spirit wants to move on either.
No. Some like being there and like the attention maybe that they didn't get in life that they're getting now in death.
Yeah.
That can be very powerful as well. What are your thoughts on this? I mean, we have about a minute left together in the segment, but when you're in a place like this, do you ever have the concern that something could try to influence you to take your body or your energy over?
I haven't been influenced very heavily before, but I've had one location that put a lot of angriness in me before, and I got really pissed off and started screaming and wanted to throw stuff. Other than that, I haven't really had anything affect me in a negative way. I've had things not take over my energy, but I've had things drain my energy for sure. Like, I get really tired really fast. It's almost like everything was sucked out of my body.
All right, we're going to take our break here. We'll come back. Monique has agreed to stay on for another hour. We're going to discuss a very haunted library. And when we return, the investigation moves somewhere a bit quieter, a place meant for reflection, for learning, for science, right? A history involved in a building and a place where spirits don't belong to the building, yet they choose it anyway. That's fascinating to me. Love affairs hidden between the shelves, art that watches back, and a presence that never made it to adulthood. That story awaits us on the next hour here on your home for everything strange and supernatural. We're here every Sunday night, 7 to 9 p.m. Central, and I hope you'll join us. I'm Dave Schrader, your host. This is the Paranormal 360.